Space Team Universe, the Holiday Special. Narrated by Phil Thron and performed by a full cast.
Cal Carver was a man of many talents, or of some talents, at least. He could talk his way out of almost any situation. Granted, the situations he talked himself into in the process were often significantly worse than those he'd been in before, but at least it kept life interesting. He could be charmingly persuasive, particularly to women of a certain age who felt their husbands weren't paying them nearly enough attention. To be fair, though, he'd lucked into a face that was handsome in a bit of rough kind of way, so he didn't exactly have to work hard to win them over. A smile would usually do it, a wink if they were being stubborn. From there, even Cal would admit that there was quite a steep drop-off to the rest of his skill set. He could do a reasonable number of sit-ups. He knew 6 guitar chords, 4 of which he could comfortably play. Following a 9-month period of unemployment in his early 20s, he could reliably describe the plot of any given episode of Cagney and Lacey within 6 seconds of the opening credits ending. After those, he started to struggle. On a good day, his sense of balance was marginally above average. He could run quite fast, but only while being chased. He could take a surprising number of punches to the head before falling over. Nothing to really write home about. One thing he didn't consider to be one of his skills was the ability to identify a space station, like the one that was currently filling most of the view screen of his stolen spaceship, the Shatner. Another of the skills Cal very much did not possess was precognition, the ability to see into the future. If that had been among his talents, he would almost certainly have turned the ship around there and then, and everything that followed could have been avoided. The station was an enormous, barrel-like construction made of a dark metal that would have made it difficult to see against the blackness of space were it not for the hundreds of lights dotting its surface like well-organized stars. It looked dirty, somehow, like the metal had rusted in patches. Cal vaguely remembered learning that metal couldn't rust in space, but either no one had bothered to tell this space station that, or the brown marks were something other than rust. For a moment, he had a little flashback to the cell he'd briefly shared with an enormous cannibalistic serial killer back on Earth, and to the lumpy, body-fluidy streaks across the walls. He shuddered. Since being taken to outer space a couple of days ago, most of his time had been spent trying to escape death. Even so, he'd take almost being killed by aliens over shiz-stained walls any day.
Shiz!
After his alien abduction, he'd been forcibly implanted with a translation chip, which allowed him to understand any known alien language. Good. But censored any swear words he might attempt to say. Bad. He'd been funking furious about it to begin with, but now trying to find curse words which hadn't been censored had become one of his favorite pastimes. Jerk was the best he'd come up with so far, but he'd used it so many times in the 3 hours following its discovery that the novelty had well and truly worn off.
Hey, it ain't that bad.
Mech, a 7-foot-tall tangle of metal and flesh, stood comfortably upright, his magnetic feet locked onto the flight deck floor. Actually, calling him a tangle of metal and flesh was being generous. He was almost entirely metal, except for a patch of skin on one arm, and his face, which, from the top lip to halfway up the forehead, was not exactly human, but definitely organic. His skin was a dark reddish-brown, the whites of his eyes actually closer to yellow. His hulking metal frame had been spray-painted with a variety of symbols and emblems which announced him as a space pirate. This, however, wasn't true. The spray job had been part of a cover story that had recently been forced upon him by President Sinclair, head of the Zyrtex Corporation. Mech didn't like his new design, nor did he like anything else Sinclair had done to him. And that was one of the main reasons why they had plotted a course for this place.
North Star Station, dead ahead.
Teela Lauren had been a fast-rising officer in the Zyrtex military, marked as one to watch by her superiors. Of course, that was before she'd realized she was working for the bad guys. Now she was a fearless fugitive on the run from a corrupt government that was desperate to take her down. Or so she liked to tell herself, at least.
Yeah, we can totally see it. It's like right there.
Cal glanced across at the creature sitting in the chair closest to his. Unlike most teenage girls, Mizette of the Grakes, Miz to her friends, was a powerfully built werewolf-like alien who was covered with fur from head to toe. She had recently adapted her chair to make it more comfortable. Largely, this involved tearing a hole in the base with her claws for her tail to fit through. Cal could see it now, hanging down below the seat. It gave an involuntary flick of excitement when she realized Cal was looking at her.
Hey.
She flicked her tongue across her lips. It was, presumably, meant to be a sexually suggestive gesture, but all it suggested to Cal was that she'd just enjoyed a delicious bowl of pedigree chum.
Hey yourself.
He turned his attention back to the screen.
I'm supposed to announce it? It's protocol.
It's pointless.
It's so everyone on the flight deck is aware of our current status. What if you hadn't been looking at the screen? You wouldn't have known we were approaching the station.
I wouldn't have cared. I'm not flying the ship. I don't need narration.
But it's protocol.
Zyrtex protocol. You don't work for Zyrtex no more.
Fine. That's fine. I won't announce anything again. We all happy now? We'll just fly towards things without me saying a word. You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Oh, I bet you would. I bet you would.
Miz turned her seat just a fraction towards Cal.
Is she having, like, a breakdown or something?
Cal shrugged, just briefly, then flashed an encouraging smile at the back of Lauren's head. It was quite attractive, as far as backs of heads went. Her hair, impossibly dark, was scraped back into a viciously tight ponytail. At the edges of her seat, he could just make out the outsides of both shoulders. The skin looked starkly white, but on closer inspection was actually a very pale blue. Not that he'd actually had a chance to inspect it all that closely, though not for want of trying.
Well, I for one appreciate you announcing things we can all clearly see on screen. Which, I appreciate, sounds sarcastic, but it isn't, honest. This whole being in outer space thing is all pretty new to me.
Really? You ain't mentioned that before.
Cal pointed to Mech.
Haha, now that was sarcastic. I had no idea you were programmed to understand sarcasm.
Programmed? I ain't programmed.
Mech tapped the side of his skull.
Up here. This is all me, man. I ain't no robot.
Oh, of course you're not.
Cal turned back to the front.
You're a space robot.
Mech's metal fingers whirred into fists, but before he could make a move, a line of text flashed at the lower right of the view screen.
We're being hailed.
Cal shuffled himself into a more upright position in his seat and channeled his inner Captain Kirk.
On screen.
Then he jumped in fright as something that was 70% teeth, 22% eyes, and very little else filled the screen.
Jesus Christ, what the funk is that?
You know he can hear you, right?
Cal smoothed the front of his shirt down.
By which I mean, hello!
He waved at the monstrosity on the monitor.
Hi there, I'm Captain Cal Carver of the...
He licked his lips, which had suddenly gone very dry under the boggle-eyed glare of the tooth thing.
Lauren, you're better at all this official stuff than me. I'm gonna let you handle this.
Lauren stiffened with excitement. This was her moment.
This is First Officer Teela Lauren of the Shatner, a scavenger-class vessel en route through this system. We request docking authorization so that we might effect some repairs
Gluk?
On...
Gluk Disselproof, is that you?
At the mention of his real name, all eyes went to Mech.
Yeah. Yeah, it's me.
You know this guy?
The tooth monster put a clawed hand to his chest.
You mean he's never mentioned me?
Only known them for 2 days. I ain't exactly giving them my life story.
2 whole days and you haven't told them about me.
Oh, please be his wife, please be his wife, please be his wife.
Wife? Chance would be a fine thing.
The tooth thing waved a dismissive claw. His terrifying mouth contorted into something that very vaguely resembled a smile.
Harlish Co.
Yeah. Harlish Co to you too.
Silly. My name is Harlish Co. I'm one of the hosts here on North Star Station, and we'll be pleased to welcome you aboard.
He turned to the side, and his face was illuminated by a glow from off-screen as he tapped a few controls. From that angle, and with the light shining up from below, he managed to look even more terrifying.
There is, of course, a docking fee to pay. How do you wish to make payment?
Cal looked around the bridge.
Anyone have any cash on them? No?
He turned back to the screen.
Would you take an IOU?
Unfortunately not. But your ship appears to have an open line of credit funded by... Huh?
He blinked his many eyes and looked more closely at his off-screen display.
The Zyrtex Corporation. Should I charge the fee there?
Yes. Yes, you should. Can we use that for other purchases while on board?
Yes, of course. I'll just need your thumbprints when you arrive.
Excellent! Then spread the word. Drinks are on us.
On the fourth try, Lauren finally managed to land the Shatner in the assigned docking platform aboard the North Star. Technically, she had been one of the best pilots in the whole of the Zyrtex fleet, but that ranking was based almost exclusively on her flight simulator scores, a form of training which, she had discovered, didn't necessarily translate to the real world. Unbuckling his seatbelt, Cal reached under his chair, then briefly recoiled as something wet and slimy pressed itself against his palm.
Sorry, buddy. Still getting used to that.
He held his hand steady this time for the blob to hop aboard. The part of Splurt that was green and gelatinous quivered. As the little guy was almost entirely green and gelatinous, the effect was really rather impressive. The only bit of Splurt that was neither green nor all that gelatinous were his eyes. They floated inside the goo, 2 perfectly round and oddly human-looking detached eyeballs. Cal had convinced himself that he could read the emotions in Splurt's eyes, despite the fact their range of expression stretched from bloodshot to marginally less bloodshot. He, if indeed that was even the correct pronoun, was a shapeshifter that had been discovered in deep space by a Zyrtex mining operation. President Sinclair had intended to use him as a bargaining chip for a deal with an alien gangster type, but Cal had intervened, and now Splurt was considered a valuable and much-loved member of the Shatner's crew by everyone aboard, with the possible exception of Mech, Lauren, and Miz. Still, Cal thought he was funking adorable.
You ain't taking that thing, are you?
He's not a thing. He's Splurt.
You ain't taking that Splurt. Are you?
Splurt's eyes tick-tocked between Cal and Mech, watching them both.
Of course I am. He's part of the crew. If we go aboard, he comes too.
North Star can be a little... lively. By which I mean unpleasant and dangerous.
Yeah, I got that from the way you pulled that face when you said lively.
Something like that rare species or whatever is going to attract unwanted attention.
It'll be fine. He's a funking shapeshifter. Look.
He set Splurt down on the floor.
So, let's say there's trouble. Some bad guy has spotted Splurt and fallen in love with him because, let's be honest, only a monster wouldn't.
He shot Mech an accusing glare.
He decides he's going to Splurt-nap him, then boom. What does Splurt do? He shapeshifts.
With a dramatic flourish, Cal pointed to Splurt. Splurt stared back at him impassively. Nothing happened. If Splurt had eyelids, he would have blinked. But he didn't. Cal leaned down.
That's your cue, buddy. Help me out here?
He straightened as Splurt's surface began to ripple. The green goo expanded upwards, stretching and twisting as it adopted a new form. Cal turned and grinned triumphantly at the others.
He shapeshifts, blending into the background as he transforms to become...
He turned back to the now drastically altered Splurt and stopped.
Dorothy out of the Golden Girls?
And it was. There, standing in the middle of the flight deck, was a tall, gray-haired, and ever so slightly masculine older woman.
Who the funk is Dorothy?
And like, what are the Golden Girls?
Having lived their entire lives on other worlds, none of the rest of the crew were even passingly familiar with 1980s TV sitcom The Golden Girls, or its spin-off sequel, The Golden Palace. This extended to Splurt, too, who Cal had to assume had never seen even one of the original show's 180 episodes. Despite his inability to speak, however, Splurt possessed some sort of mind-reading ability which allowed him to draw images and memories from the minds of those around him and transform his physical form to match. But quite why, out of all the billions of memories in Cal's head, Splurt had selected Dorothy out of the Golden Girls would, Cal supposed, forever remain a mystery.
She's a Miami spinster, but my point stands, Splurt's perfectly safe.
He patted Dorothy on one sturdy shoulder.
So, you coming, buddy?
Splurt nodded enthusiastically. Cal kept his smile fixed in place.
You changing back, or...?
Splurt shook his Dorothy-like head.
Well, all right then. I guess it's us four and Dorothy.
Cal smiled across at the scowling cyborg and gestured towards the corridor leading to the ship's exit.
Mech, lead the way.
There were three other ships in this part of the bay, with enormous hangar-like doors on two of the walls suggesting further areas in both directions. The ship closest to the Shatner was an angry-looking beast of a thing that made Cal think of a grumpy shark.
Hey, isn't that a Samorium, what's it called? The Thrasher?
Thrasher. And yes, the North Star is in Samorium space. There'll be more where that one came from.
Well, that's good, right? They like us, don't they?
For now. But I suggest you don't talk to them too much, in case you make them change their mind.
Cal thought about protesting, but shrugged.
Good point. Well made.
The other ships were types he didn't recognize. One was small and sleek and looked barely large enough for one pilot, while the other was its exact opposite, a bulky, clumsy-looking construction that looked like it could have been knocked together in someone's backyard over a long weekend. The hangar itself was a grim affair, like an underground car park in the wrong part of town. The walls were a mishmash of welded metal plating, each plate a slightly different shade of gray to its neighbors. They were marked with colorful graffiti and somewhat less colorful blaster-first scorch marks. The chip implanted in Cal's eyeball tried translating the stylized graffiti text, but the sheer amount of it was proving overwhelming, and the words swam and slithered disturbingly across the walls.
So, where now?
A door sliding open in the farthest wall answered the question for him. A squat figure with a lot of teeth and only marginally fewer eyes raised a stubby arm and waved enthusiastically.
Coo-ee! Over here!
Cal, Miz, Lauren, Mech, and Dorothy out of the Golden Girls hurried along an erratically lit corridor, trying to keep pace with Harlish. For someone with such short legs and a torso that was basically a chubby triangle, he had the quickest non-emergency walking pace Cal had ever seen.
So, Gluck and I go way back, don't we, Gluck?
They had been hurrying along it now for a good couple of minutes, but appeared to have made no progress whatsoever. Cal was sure they'd passed the same featureless expanse of metal wall half a dozen times already, and he was starting to feel like they were stuck in a chase scene in a particularly low-budget episode of Scooby-Doo.
Sure. Yeah. Way back.
Former work colleagues or old roommates?
Wait, no.
Childhood sweethearts.
Oh, I like this one.
Harlish led them around a corner into what was, to all extents and purposes, the same corridor.
No, we served together, didn't we, Gluck?
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
What? Like in the army?
We don't like to talk about it.
Well, he doesn't.
Harlish stopped outside a door and spun into a crisp about-turn.
I, on the other hand, will happily spill all once I get off duty.
He looked Cal up and down, then winked. At least, Cal thought he winked. With so many eyes to keep track of, though, there was a good chance it was involuntary.
For a price.
Tempting, but we won't be staying long.
We'll be here until tomorrow. I'm getting my paintwork fixed.
Harlish tapped a finger against a few different teeth in quick succession.
We don't have many rooms. It's Kroyshuk. Always busy on Kroyshuk.
Funking Kroyshuk. Ugh.
Cal looked expectantly at the others, waiting for them to say something. No one did.
Anyone gonna tell me what Kroyshuk is?
It's a holiday, a celebration. A lot of planets in this sector consider it a special day, where they get together, exchange gifts, celebrate the love of family and friends,
throw up in their own mouths.
So it's like Christmas.
Cal's eyes shifted to Mech. A smile crept across his face.
Which, I suppose...
Don't say it, man.
Makes it...
I'm warning you, don't go there.
Space Christmas.
Mech's face darkened. He muttered something below his breath, but resisted the urge to pick Cal up and smash him face first into the ceiling. Cal looked left and right along the corridor. Aside from Harlish, the crew, and Dorothy out of the Golden Girls, there was no one to be seen.
It doesn't look very busy.
Without a word, Harlish pushed open the door beside them. Beyond the door was a room, Cal supposed, although that didn't really do it justice. It was a vast hall, a couple of football fields from end to end, and stretching a good 7 or 8 floors high. Moving ramps ferried thousands of, not people exactly, but individuals between each floor, where they milled around on vast mezzanines or leaned over the balcony railings, watching the other groups of individuals below. The reason Cal didn't describe them as people was that very few of them bore even a fleeting resemblance to what he had, until very recently, considered the textbook definition of a person. Creatures of all shapes, sizes, textures, colors, and consistencies mingled, drank, argued, danced, or found other ways to occupy themselves in every available space. It looked like the cantina scene in the original Star Wars might have looked had George Lucas had access to a bottomless budget, several thousand jobbing actors, and an unlimited supply of methamphetamine.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty busy.
After closing the door, Harlish looked up from an iPad-like device he had produced from somewhere. While it wasn't easy to read his face, with all those teeth and eyes cluttering it up, Cal thought he looked pleased. Or hungry. Possibly horny, although Cal hoped it wasn't that one.
It's your lucky day. I've been able to secure 4 rooms for the night.
I'll share with Cal.
Best if Splurt bunks up with me.
Cal jabbed a thumb in Dorothy's direction. Dorothy waved both hands excitedly, then stopped as abruptly as she'd started. He shot Miz a smile he hoped conveyed disappointment, rather than the overwhelming sense of relief he actually felt.
No saying what he'll get up to if left to his own devices.
Miz crossed her arms and shrugged.
Whatever.
Very good. I'll just go ahead and...
Harlish tapped his screen a couple of times.
There. All done. You all have rooms for the night. Good ones, too, on our more, amicable floors.
He shrugged just a fraction.
Mostly.
Mostly? What do you mean?
Well, as I say, we are very busy. You know, what with Kroyshuk and everything. Ideally, I'd have got you all close together, but unfortunately, it just wasn't possible. Three rooms are located on our more desirable premium decks. The fourth, isn't.
Great. So how do we decide who gets that room?
Cal raised his hands in a gesture of surrender.
It's fine, it's fine. Let's not argue about it. Mech can take it.
Say what? How come I gotta take it?
Because I'm the captain. And the others are girls. Women. The others are women.
So? They can handle themselves.
You're not even the real captain. We're just pretending you're in charge until we figure out what we're going to do.
You take that back! Of course I'm the captain. I've got a badge.
A badge you made from a funkin' bottle top.
And then lost.
Fine. You know what? Fine. If you don't want to do the decent thing and sleep in what I'm sure is a perfectly pleasant room.
It isn't.
If you don't want to do that, then I guess there's only one way to decide who's sleeping where.
Cal turned to Harlish.
There's a bar in there, right?
Several. Why, are you planning on buying me a drink?
Hey, you never know your luck. But actually, I was wondering, does the bar have such a thing as four drinking straws and maybe a pair of scissors? Well, buddy, looks like we drew the short straw.
Cal and Dorothy from the Golden Girls surveyed the graffiti-marked metal door set into the wall of the single most intimidating corridor Cal had ever set foot in. Everything about the corridor, from the flickering overhead lights to the blood smears that dribbled down the walls and pooled on the scuffed vinyl floor.
I mean, you know, we literally did draw the short straw, obviously. Whose dumb idea was it to do that?
Dorothy shot Cal a slightly accusing look, but then mock punched him on the chin.
You know what? You're right. I don't know what I'm complaining about. It could be worse.
He pressed his thumb against the door's locking pad. A smell, no, not a smell, a full-blown stench billowed out of the cramped, darkened room beyond.
Oh, Jesus, it's worse.
Turning away long enough to gulp down a deep breath, Cal leaned close enough to the door that he could see almost all of the room without actually putting any of himself inside it.
I reckon we go back and sleep on the Shatner? This place does not look sanitary.
A door opened behind them, making Cal jump in fright. He spun, fists raised, and came dangerously close to punching a pregnant woman in the face. Of course, woman was stretching it, as was more and more often proving to be the case these last few days. She was not a woman in the traditional sense of the word. Most women Cal had known until recently didn't have such wide eyes, for example, or bean-shaped skulls that curved quite so far back. None of them, as far as he could recall, had skin that was such a vibrant shade of pink, or a neck so agonizingly thin and fragile-looking. So, not a woman, exactly, but something about the way her features and figure were arranged told him she was female, at least. He wasn't sure how he knew she was pregnant, but he somehow did. Yes, she had a swollen belly, that was one of the traditional hallmarks of pregnancy back on Earth, but she also had six fingers on each hand and little fleshy frills around both wrists, so he wasn't sure the tummy bump counted for much. The way she clutched her hands protectively across the bump, though, that was a dead giveaway.
Sorry. It took me by surprise. Hope I didn't scare you.
What the hell. He was going to stick with woman. Shot glances along the corridor in both directions before her eyes darted up and down over the strangers standing in front of her.
Cal Carver. This is my friend, Dorothy, out of the Golden Girls. Presumably she has a second name, but I'm not sure what it is.
He gestured to the open door behind them.
We're in the room right across the hall. Although, to be honest, it's not really to the standard we were hoping.
Still looking them both up and down, the woman retreated into her room and closed the door. A moment later, a light above the thumbprint pad switched from green to red.
Wow. She seemed friendly.
Cal turned back to the open door of his own room, considered venturing inside, then tapped his thumb against the sensor pad.
Come on, buddy. Let's say you and I go find the bar.
Cal opened his eyes. His brain screamed. He closed them again. He tried to think, but was still in that not-quite-awake phase where his IQ was so low that thinking wasn't yet a possibility. He opened his eyes. His brain screamed. He closed them again and had a serious case of déjà vu. His lips were as dry as parchment. His hair hurt. There was a weight on his chest that he assumed was probably cancer. That was a bummer. He tried to think again, but his thoughts were scattered and disconnected, like train cartridges after a derailment. Accessing memories from more than a few seconds ago was still not possible, so he focused on the more recent past instead. The ceiling. From the brief glance he'd got of it, it had been white. Had being the operative word. Now it was a murky swirl of creams and browns with a bulge of black mold in the corner. The fact he'd been facing the ceiling told him something else, too. It took him a moment to figure out what it was. He was lying down. He held his breath. It was all he could really contribute to the situation at the present time.
Splurt, you there?
There was no reply, but then, as Splurt couldn't speak, to the best of anyone's knowledge, this didn't reveal much. Cal had no choice but to open his eyes again. His brain protested, but his brain would just have to learn to live with it. Cal lifted his head. The brain's protest was joined by every other part of his body, all demanding to know what the funk he thought he was playing at. He managed to keep his head raised long enough to figure out that neither Splurt nor Dorothy out of the Golden Girls were in the room, then collapsed back onto the pillow again.
Hey!
His arms slipped down to his sides, and he realized the weight on his chest hadn't been cancer, but his hands. That was something, at least. The part of his brain that processed smells chose that moment to wake up.
Oh, Christ.
He draped an arm across his face. The room reeked. It was sour and mulchy at the same time, with a tangy note that could have been just a suggestion of horse urine. It was the same smell he'd been hit with when he and Splurt had gone to check out their room. Ignoring his body's complaints, he lifted his head again and looked around. Yeah, this was the same place. His thoughts shuffled into something more closely approximating chronological order. He remembered the bar. He remembered drinking. He remembered something about wanting to put an angry little man in his pocket. After that, not much. Flashes, at most. A chair, some shouting, a blood-soaked Dorothy out of the Golden Girls, some more shouting, then... Mech? He blinked. Yes, Mech had been there. Lauren and Miz, too, he thought, although he couldn't see them, just sort of vaguely sense their presence.
No, please, no, don't.
Cal fixed his gaze on the door until it shimmied into some sort of focus. It was then he saw the note pinned to it. We're up in Mumful. It read, then was signed in quite an official-looking squiggle at the bottom by Lauren.
Why the funk is Mumful?
Cal's gaze shifted towards the door handle. He swung his legs out of bed and stumbled towards the door. The carpet alternated between moist and sticky and hard and flaky in the space of a few steps, and he realized he had no shoes or socks on. Still, no time to worry about that now. Besides, he'd thrown all his momentum into reaching the door and now had no means of stopping. He stumbled into a little table with a solid-looking metal lamp sitting on top, then pulled open the door.
Hey, what's all the noise?
8 large and surly-looking space pirates filled the corridor directly outside his room. They surrounded the same pregnant alien woman he and Splurt had met earlier. Her vibrant pink skin had a blush of deep red across one cheek and a graze across the other. Two pirates held her arms, one on each side, but her hands still instinctively reached for her swollen belly, trying to shield it from harm. The woman's eyes met Cal's. They were naturally wide, but he suspected they were currently wider than they had ever been. The emotion in them struck him like a hammer blow, shattering the crust of his hangover and snapping him, not to attention, but into less of a bleary-eyed slump. There was everything in those eyes: helplessness, despair, fear, doubt, and the one that really kicked Cal in the nuts, hope. She thought Cal was going to save her, him, on his own, from eight big, ugly bimsters with knives and swords slung at their hips.
Help me! Please! They want to take my baby!
Get back in your room and stay there.
The largest pirate's hand was gripping the hilt of the curved blade he had tucked into his belt.
This ain't your concern.
Cal looked across the faces of the pirates. Some of them genuinely wanted to go back inside. The others looked like they'd prefer him to try something stupid. He didn't meet the woman's gaze again. He couldn't bring himself to.
Sorry.
He leaned his forehead against the closed door, listening to the footsteps turn and begin to move off along the corridor. Then he picked up the lamp and opened the door. He brought the lamp's metal base down on the back of the closest pirate's head, then drove a barefooted kick into the leg of another, right behind the knee. Both men went down, falling forwards and stumbling into the other men in front. Cal swung again with the lamp, catching another pirate across the forehead as he turned. Blood fountained from a split that appeared above the man's left eye, and the corridor erupted into bellowing chaos. Swinging the lamp by the power cord, Cal clipped another of the pirates across the jaw, but his straggly brown beard cushioned him from the impact. Swinging upwards with his sword, the pirate sliced through the cord, and the lamp thudded to the floor. Despite the loss of his only weapon, Cal wasn't done for yet. The narrow corridor was working to his advantage, as it stopped all the remaining pirates all jumping on him at once. Still, it wouldn't take all of them to beat him. Just one of them would probably do the trick. He thought about running. Running was definitely an option. Sure, it would mean leaving this nice alien lady and her baby to whatever the pirates had planned for her, but was that really his problem? Yeah, he thought. Annoyingly, it was. But why? Asked that little devil on his shoulder. They're not going to hurt the baby, just take it. That's what she said. The voice was right. That was what the woman had said. Maybe they had good reason for taking the baby. Maybe they were from some sort of space social services unit and were going to ensure it got the best possible start in life. He looked across the scarred, misshapen faces of the pirates. None of them exactly screamed, "Child's best interests." All of this took place in the space of around half a second, fear and adrenaline having kicked Cal's hangover-ravaged brain into overdrive. By the end of it, he'd had an idea. He grabbed for the sword of the pirate he'd KO'd with the lamp and whipped it free of its leather scabbard. His experience of swords was limited to being able to make them from modeling balloons, and he wasn't even very good at that. Fighting a band of experienced pirate types was out of the question, but then hopefully he wouldn't have to. Cal thrust the tip of the sword towards the pregnant woman's belly. Cal almost grinned, just as he'd hoped. He brought the sword to a stop just inches from the woman's stomach.
Anyone moves, and I run her through. Then it's bye-bye, baby. That's what you want, isn't it, the baby?
No.
Nice try, fatty.
The man briefly glanced down at himself in a moment of acute self-consciousness.
Let the girl go, or I kill the baby.
The pirate who had sliced the lamp's power cord narrowed his dark eyes. They were ringed with lumpy black mascara, like he'd partly based his look on Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean.
But if you take her, we won't have the baby.
And if you don't let me take her, the baby is a goner.
Cal twisted the sword for emphasis.
Yeah, but that's my point, isn't it? Either way, we won't have the baby.
Right. But at least the baby would still be alive.
But what good does that do us, is what I'm saying. King Anderley wants the baby, right?
Right.
So, if you take the girl, we ain't got the baby, has we? And he ain't gonna like that. No, he ain't gonna like that one bit, is King Anderley.
Will he like it if the baby's dead?
Cal gave the sword a quick upwards flick. Cal instinctively opened his mouth to apologize, but stopped himself just in time.
No, he won't like that neither. But, well, the thing is, he'll be just as angry either way. So, way I see it is, we got two choices. Either we let you take the girl, and King Anderley is angry, or you kill the baby, and King Anderley is angry.
So, you might as well let me take the girl, then?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's one option, certainly. But that way, we don't get to kill you or nothing. If we let you go ahead and kill the baby, then we get to cut you up into little bits.
Or take him upstairs and feed him to the Osnark.
A smile split the lead pirate's beard, revealing two rows of golden teeth.
Oh, yeah. That is a most excellent suggestion, Brian. If he kills the baby, we can feed him to the Osnark.
The sword was getting heavier in Cal's hand. His mind raced, frantically trying to process these latest developments. He wasn't sure what an Osnark was, but he was reasonably sure he didn't want to be fed to it. He was also a little taken aback that one of the pirates was named Brian, but that felt a little less pressing than the whole Osnark situation.
Okay, third option. How about I take the girl, you guys count to 60, then come after us?
The pirates considered this.
10.
50. Final offer.
5.
Okay, Jesus, 10 then. But I keep the sword, and you have to...
1.
Oh, you're just mean.
He grabbed the woman by an arm and pulled her free of the piratey throng.
Come on, lady, move!
They stumbled along the corridor, past the open doors to their rooms, the woman trying desperately to pull her arm free of Cal's grip.
2.
Stop funking pulling your arm! We need to run!
You're going to kill my baby! Let go!
3.
Lady, I just saved you and your kid.
Cal pulled her around a corner and onto a long, straight corridor that stretched out ahead for a dishearteningly long distance.
If you want me to continue saving you and your kid, you have to trust me.
Cal powered on. The woman struggled for a few more seconds, then seemed to accept that it was getting her nowhere and picked up the pace.
Thank you. Now, we need to find a way to get to my ship. I think there's an elevator or something around here somewhere. If we can just...
79-10.
Ah, those cheating funkers!
There was a door on the left that looked different to the others. It had a frosted glass pane, a bar handle, and an illuminated sign above it bearing a series of cryptic symbols. Cal didn't wait for the letters to translate and instead just threw himself at the door, pushed down the bar, and dragged the woman inside. Beyond the door were two sets of stairs, one going up, the other down. Cal knew his room was deep in the bowels of the North Star Station, so he raced for the stairs leading upwards and took them two at a time. 3 paces, 6 steps up, he felt his head throb and darkness start to close in and decided to take them one at a time instead. His hangover may have gone, but it hadn't gone very far. After a dozen or so steps, the stairway reached a narrow landing before another set of steps led up in the opposite direction. They turned the corner and hurried on, the woman waddling awkwardly up the stairs, holding on to Cal with one hand and the handrail with the other. They reached the next landing just as the pirates came barreling through the door on the floor below. There was another door here, leading out into an equally grim-looking corridor. Cal hesitated, hoping to hear the pirates go charging down the stairs, but their footsteps grew louder, and he realized they'd made the correct choice.
Shiz!
He shoved the woman towards the next set of steps.
Go, go!
She hesitated, panic flaring behind her wide eyes for a moment, then waddled upwards as fast as she could. Cal pulled open the door leading out into the corridor, then darted up the steps behind the woman, catching up with her at the next landing. Taking her by the arm again, he pulled her up the next flight, then stopped and listened as the pirates arrived on the previous floor, spotted the door slowly closing, then barreled out into the corridor. Head swimming from the effort, Cal climbed another few flights of steps, helping the woman along behind him. Three stories up, they heard the pirates pile angrily back into the stairwell again, and Cal decided that was his cue to leave. Easing open the next door they came to, he guided the woman through, then quietly clicked it closed. They pressed themselves against the wall on either side of the door as the pirates clattered past and held their breath until the din had continued past them and upwards to the floors above.
Oh, thank Funk for that.
Cal slid the sword into the belt of his cargo pants. He looked over at the woman. She was breathing heavily, her hands slung below her belly like support scaffolding.
Shiz, you okay?
Fine. I'll be fine.
I'm Cal. Cal Carver. What's your name?
The woman studied him for a moment, as if unsure whether she should be parting with the information.
Miranda.
Well, nice to meet you, Miranda. Mind telling me why a gang of pirates wants your baby?
Her arms tightened around the bump.
They don't. King Anderley does. He's offered a reward for anyone who brings him my son.
King Fonking Anderley. What a jerk. Who's, King Anderley?
Pardon?
Who is he? King Anderley.
You don't know who King Anderley is? How can you not know who King Anderley is? Everyone knows who King Anderley is.
I'm pretty new around here, so he's like, what, the king of space?
No, he's not an actual king. Not really, that's just what people call him. He runs a few systems in the Remnants.
Oh, I know someone from the Remnants, Korvac. Stone guy, got a butler, or did have, anyway. Know him?
Miranda shook her head.
Wait, you don't know who Korvac is? How can you not know who Korvac is? Everyone knows who Korvac is.
Wait, do you mean Kornak? The Igneon? The Ketubeth Lord? Shornak's brother?
Yes, that guy.
Oh, yeah, everyone knows him.
Cal tried to peer through the frosted glass of the door that led back to the stairs.
I think the pirates are gone. You should be safe now.
Safe? I'm not safe. I'll never be safe. You think King Anderley just sent those guys to get me? There are hundreds of people on this station looking for me. Pirates, bounty hunters, any idiot with a lack of funds and a lack of conscience. They're all looking for me.
Jesus, how come he wants the baby so bad?
Miranda's grip tightened still further on her bump. She shook her head, as if refusing to say the words out loud. Eventually, they found their way out.
He wants to eat him.
The baby? He wants to eat the baby?
Yes.
King Anderley. King Anderley wants to eat the baby?
Please stop saying it.
Miranda's wide eyes shimmered.
You'll help me, won't you? You'll keep my baby safe?
Cal held her gaze for a moment, then looked down at his bare feet.
Man, I totally should have grabbed my shoes.
He turned his attention back to the stairs. If Miranda was telling the truth, and he had no reason to believe she wasn't, the floors between here and the Shatner would be swarming with pirates and bounty hunters, all searching for the girl and her unborn child. Dozens of stories. Hundreds of heavily armed bad guys. And all Cal had were his wits, a sword, and a hangover sent from the bowels of hell itself.
Funk it. Let's just take the elevator.